David Halpin, MBBS, FRCS, retired orthopaedic and trauma surgeon and writer. I qualified in 64 at St. Mary's, a wonderful medical school, and I've been learning ever since. I'm what my father called an old josser. I'm still learning at 86.
And what were your specialities?
Orthopaedic surgery, that's named after the child. Orthos, straight, pedic, child. And that's because the surgery was mostly to do with things like cerebral palsy, tuberculosis, things like that, and trauma. So I had to deal with people coming in from the roads, often from excess speed or drugs or alcohol, and lots of old ladies with fractured hips. And they used to get, the incidence was rising 3-6% a year at one point.
Now, one of the things you must have seen is that in your orthopaedics is an increase in the number of children who are exhibiting symptoms to do with, potentially anyway, to do with vaccine injury. One of the things that you've seen in your lifetime, David, is the enormous increase in infant vaccination. So maybe you could say something about the wisdom of that, if you were in charge of national policy on infant vaccination, because this is celebrated, isn't it, in many ways.
Yes.
The idea is, look, by getting these vaccines into the kids when they're literally just like newborn or a year old, what you're doing is you're setting them up for life.
Well, don't forget, they're also giving it to the mother, and they know it crosses a placenta. So they're being immunized pre-birth. And it's said that by the time they're mature, if they have obedient parents who've listened to all the propaganda or who've been overwhelmed by the propaganda, a child will have had 90 different antigens by the time they're mature. But I meet a lot of people who rejected the COVID vaccine. They exaggerated the numbers of people having it. A lot of the obedient middle class had it, of course, and a lot of the elderly, because they often feel rather frail. And I now see it going around Bubby Tracy. At least half the elderly are walking with a high-stepping gait, which I was good on neurology, study of the nervous system and its disease, and it's called a Tibetic gait from Tabes dorsalis, the gait that they have in syphilis, tertiary syphilis. And we were told to the students, it was a bit of a joke really, that you could hear the House of the Lords coming out of their session because their shoes, their feet, were flapping on the ground. They had drop feet. And that's because they had an affection of their spinal cords, which was put together under the title a Tabetic from Tabes dorsalis, the description of the spinal cord when it's affected by in tertiary neurosyphilis. Now, these people I see in Bubby Tracy, they don't have it completely. It's a bit of foot drop, but the main thing is they bring their knees up higher than they need. It's a high-stepping gait, and it's very, very common. And so this is one of the stigmata, one of the signs of having been jabbed with what I call from the start a toxic, I had some other title for it actually, but there's no question. My dear friend Jo Clark-Irons in Torquay, she also noticed two other things, among other things, that the people who'd been jabbed gathered a sallow complexion, and that's definite. They look a bit yellowish and pale. And the other thing is that they aged quickly. They aged almost overnight. And a good case in point is the wife of a judge who she gardens for. She was a fit, retired physiotherapist. She had one problem. She was blind. She had an accident, and it whacked the back of her head where the brain, the visual center is. And I met her with the judge. I know him quite well, actually, when I was giving a talk on Kelly in the big Torquay Museum to about 140 people. They didn't come in, but they talked with Sue. Now, that lady was fit. She had a bone scan, a so-called DEXA scan, and was known to have normal bone density. Following the jab, about, I don't know, 9 months later, a vertebra collapsed in the lumbar spine. And Halpin knows why. Well, there's two possibilities. One is that the feeding artery of that vertebra, the vertebral body, the marrow, in fact, was blocked by a thrombus caused by the spike protein, which causes thrombosis, either microscopic or submicroscopic or larger than that, and it includes these massive thrombi which are being found in people's veins who've been inoculated. They look like snakes, and a lot of it is amyloid, and the normal response to a clot is to destroy it with macrophages, cells which come in, start eating up the abnormal tissue. They don't do that. It stays in the leg. And that's what is often found in the lung, if that then passes from the limb into the lung and may kill the patient. So that's one aspect of the jab, is the collapse of a vertebra. The other possibility is this, Tony. It's a hypothesis, and I've tried to test it against several people, you know, who experts you should know, but they haven't grasped the idea. Each of our cells has a life. The cells which produce our red cells in our bone marrow, they probably only last for a few days at the most. The cells in our bone cortex will last for weeks. In the joints, in the synovocytes, the ones that in fact help lubricate the joint, they have a life perhaps of some weeks. But I believe that just as you see aging in the adult whole, the individual, I believe that their cells are undergoing an early death. The death of the cell is called apoptosis, A-P-O-P-T-O-S-I-S. So my hypothesis is that this vile vaccine, this global bioweapon that was paid for by Fauci's CDC in big two tranches to be worked on in Wuhan, and I'm quite sure was being studied in America and probably Ukraine, where they had over 60 biolabs, we're told by the Russians. They were looking at every feature of it. They were looking at if it crossed the placenta. They looked at if it crossed the so-called blood-brain barrier. That's a myth anyway. There's no blood-brain barrier. It's nonsense. And this is what's been going on. We've been lied to by corporations, by politicians particularly, and it goes on and on.
Well, yeah, but you—I did ask you about infants, and I wonder what you would say to, you know, with all your experience of medicine, to a young mother scratching her head, wondering whether it's a good thing or not to give. The way these vaccines work nowadays, there's sometimes six of them administered at once.
No, I'd say that I'd say to a young mother now, I've changed a bit. I would have later them having immunized against tetanus, lockjaw. It's an awful disease. I saw it in Bristol. There's a special unit at Ham Green, where I worked for 3 months looking after men with waterwork trouble. But a chap there called McCrae had a wonderful unit looking after lockjaw. So I would encourage a parent to have their child, when they're about six or seven, immunized against tetanus. But I would tell a young mother not to have her baby inoculated, invaded with any bloody vaccine. I say that now. I have no doubt about it. And we know from things like the Amish in America, we know it from talking to people who avoided any vaccine. There's a lovely chap I met who was changing the batteries in my Hilux, man of about 28, fit as a fiddle, excellent firm, family firm, dealing with batteries. He said his mother had his sister inoculated in several ways. The mother later could see the dangers of some immunization. And she did. She made sure that he wasn't vaccinated. He'd had not one jab. And there are people around this country, there's many actually, who would fit that bill. And he was absolutely certain that his mother was right and she'd helped him.
Well, look, these are anecdotal stories, but what about the medical evidence? What goes on inside the body?
The evidence, well, let me say this, Tony. I was on the editorial board of the Journal of Bone and Joint Surgery for 4 years. The editor was another lovely chap called Philip Fulford. We became very firm friends, actually. He'd been in the Navy as a naval surgeon. And he told me that, he said to me, and I knew it, there's a lot of scientific papers are flawed. Some very badly flawed. And I will come back to a personal paper that I wrote with a colleague, which was, looking back in it, I was flawed. You may remember that when the lockdown first happened, the lockdown, a term which was first used in prison riots in America, lockdown, Two professors were prominent, one from Stanhope, Professor Ioannidis, a wonderful man. His particular skill is in examining so-called scientific papers. And he says that 70% of published scientific papers are fraudulent or flawed. The other one was a man with an Ashkenazi name, lovely chap, who was an immunologist, I think, or virologist, I forget, but he also came down strongly against the vaccination that were then rolling out in America under the so-called warp speed. The lies in the title, warp speed. So, Tony, there's no question that Big Pharmacy is making, they've made, as you know, billions out of the toxic junk, I call it. Billions. Pfizer shares are still up, I think, actually. And so is Moderna. Moderna, do you know why Moderna is called Moderna? M-O-D, M-O-D-E-R-N-A. They're producing vaccines which have got ribonucleic acid, which incorporates into the genome of each individual, stupidly putting out their arms to be jabbed. So they're having their genomes. This is basic. The personality, their resistance to infection, all sorts of things. It's being changed artificially by an inoculation.
Well, look, it sounds to me like a Ministry of Defence earner. No,
it is
Moderna.
It is Moderna. Well, you
money
know the
for
thing.
Money for the MOD.
Yes. Well, the thing is that it's. Oh, yeah. That's a good one. But you know that there are people in the States, good commentators and analysts, who said that the DOD in America has been central in the development of these vaccines and a distribution. I could speak for 10 hours on the vaccination, but I'd prefer to speak about Herr Starmer and the Zionist Broadcasting Corporation and the parasite who calls himself King Charles with his queen, Camilla.
Okay, well, do feel free, but I'd love to get your take on the big medical news story of the week, David, which is about this cruise liner with about 200 people on board. It's actually quite a modest size, unlike so many of these, which has apparently got this thing called the Hantavirus, H-A-N-T-A, virus on board it, and there's been a bit of a panic for about 2 days this week. We've had all of the press saying how dangerous this is and what are we going to do, and none of the ports want to accept the ship, which seems really rather cruel. It's almost become, you know, painted like a kind of prison where people are falling like flies on board. This virus, so far as I have managed to figure out, it is mainly passed by rodents like the plague or something, and it's not really passed between humans. So it's taken about 3 days for the world's press to realise that they need to tell everyone it's not going to be another COVID. Anyway, what do you make of this?
Well, I saw reference to it on Breakfast TV this morning. Sue likes to know what the weather's doing with the local spotlight news. For about 3 minutes, it comes on a magazine program that's designed to keep turnips silent. And there was quite a bit about this Hunter virus. I looked it up. I haven't studied it deeply, but the strain that they say is causing illnesses on the ship, and the first, what they would call the there's a special term actually for it, but the first person who is being looked at is an ex-policeman. I noted that, and he's a wildlife observer, and he's been hospitalized, I think, in Holland, and is stable in his condition. But the critical thing is this, Tony, that they talk about three deaths on board the cruise ship. They speak of one death of a woman about 5 days ago. There's a little video on that BBC link I showed you. I couldn't hear it very well, but the captain is speaking to the passengers about a death, I think. He has his hands in his pockets, I notice, as he's talking about a death. Now, the critical thing as a doctor and someone who's had the closest forensic interest in the likely assassination of David Kelly, CMG, DSC, is that the lady, the first death, should undergo an autopsy with very careful analysis of her tissues, all the tissues cultured, examined under the microscope after they've been fixed in a proper way for histology, and that first death should be examined with great rigour. Nothing is said about her at all. She might have died of a coronary. She might have had the vaccination a day before she joined the boat.
I watched television tonight, the main news, Hunter virus and the cruise ship, about 20, I imagine about 10 minutes, 12 minutes. They showed a map of the dispersal of the various people who they're trying to trace, contact trace. There was a map showing some people getting off of St. Helena. They're aiming for the Canaries, and they showed two or three people in the Canaries, locals, objecting to the ship landing there and risking their health. They said you should go to a main European port like Spain. Someone was taken to Holland, as you know. Others were being, and they were talking, the HS security agency is involved, as you might know. But there's quite a lot of dispersal. And it reminded me of what I wrote in regard to Ebola. They remember there was a lady in a West African country who was in contact with Ebola, local native people who had Ebola and were being buried rapidly because it was apparently an epidemic. All that needs investigating too. But this woman, who was a nurse, I think, or a charity worker, I think, she was brought back on a plane. She changed planes, I think, in Morocco, and then she joined a plane to go to Heathrow. And the whole thing was a nonsense. She was, in fact, and then when she got to Heathrow, she was hospitalized. I remember all this now. She's come back to me. She was taken to the Royal Free Hospital, was put in a plastic tent, treated with great precaution as being an infected. She got better. She's since married, and she's had twins. She's healthy. But she went through the mill. Now, that case, that lady, she was not managed properly. It was almost as if they had designed it that she came into contact with the majority of people on the plane. They were being dispersed through Europe. So what's happened with the Hunter virus on his cruise ship that's been down to Antarctic reminds me very much of how the Ebola thing was dealt with. I think the main thing is to frighten people. It may even be to lay the ground for more attempted rollouts of lethal vaccines.
And so, 5 or 6 years on from COVID, what do you think we've learned about what actually happened? I think it's clear that this was a bioweapon.
Yes.
It was developed by people over in Wuhan or possibly elsewhere and released in Wuhan.
Yes.
EcoHealth Alliance, Peter Daszak, Anthony Fauci were all involved in funding this gain of function research. The idea being to take viruses which were, yes, man was not is not susceptible to weaponize them, basically to make them attack human tissue, etc. So down the line, I mean, this does seem to be a pretty horrific thing to have foisted on mankind, almost like kind of almost a sort of biological world war.
Well, Tony, I couldn't believe at first that it was an attempted culling in response to the billionaires like Gates and earlier on Rockefellers speaking of other human beings as useless eaters. I think the quotation is often questioned, but I think it's highly likely. The fact that the Wellcome Foundation is involved as well in this, what's it called?
Their chairman, Anthony Farrell, was one of the most important people involved in steering the policy. In fact, yes, he was revealed in an email to have done his absolute most right at the early stages of the outbreak to lie, to say that this was it had come from a bat or a pangolin, when actually, as we subsequently found out, it was nothing to do with that. So this guy is clearly Wellcome Foundation boss was lying to the world. He's been promoted for his trouble. He's now one of the chief scientific advisors to the World Health Organization.
I know, exactly who you're talking about. And a lot, if you look at the biographers of these people, there's strong connections with setups in Oxford. Oxford seems to be a nub of, quite blunt, evil. I mean it. And I think of all those antennae there. And I think of poor old Kelly, who met his death about 15 miles from Oxford, probably interrogated at a place which the CIA had for toughening up their foreign embassy people.
So if you were captain of this beleaguered ship that seems to be trying desperately to find out where it can go, this MV Hondius cruise ship, you have the ability to decide whereabouts it goes, whether it goes into a port or whether a local navy starts shooting at it because it wants to actually land people. What would be the best way to deal with this, do you think?
Right, what I'd do is I'd do it like they used to do it in the 17th century. They would come to a port. I'll speak about the port in a minute. And they'd try a yellow flag to show that they were in quarantine. And people would not approach the ship and take people off while the yellow flag was flying. If I was captain of this small cruise ship, I would make certain that the ship had good safe passage to a port where there was the best medical facility and teams who could come on board and tend, investigate anyone who was sick, who would be very careful in their note-keeping. There would be amongst them a bacteriologist or two. There'd be an epidemiologist. It was sidelined during the COVID thing. The public health officers were set aside. But I'd make sure that the people stayed on board until their health was determined, just as they did, in a way, with that cruise ship that ended up, was it in Tokyo? I forget now. There was a cruise ship that ended up in Japan, which had to be, that was quarantined for quite a long time. So that, as a captain, I would say, no one leaves the ship until we establish the cause of this supposed illness, who is ill, who might infect others, and the rest of it.
Well, there's a long incubation period, which is a bit of a problem, and we're told that actually it may be the rats on the ship that have been spreading this around. And so you're, in a way, you're condemning people if they're going to stay on this like a prison ship almost.
I think it's unlikely that there'd be rats on the ship, but we'll leave that aside. The thing is that what you did say is something which is apparently incorrect. The strain that is said to be affecting these people, including the retired policeman, wildlife expert, is the Andes strain. That's, as you know, they reckon it's mostly in South America that these rodents may carry this virus, just as rats in our sewers carry leptospirosis here. That's also a lethal disease, by the way. And people have got it from kayaking in the Dart down to Totnes, because there are many sewers entering the river, and rats will go up and down, and they'll be weeing urine, which is infected with leptospirosis. That causes liver disease, and people can die of liver failure. That's a fact. So leptospirosis is there. It's a sort of, shall we say, a hantavirus. It's a bacterium, actually. In fact, it's a motile bacteria. But going back to hantavirus, this is the Andes strain, they say, and that can be transmitted human to human, unlike the other strains of hantavirus they know about. But I've been looking at Professor May, who was on briefly on television this morning on the breakfast programme, and he's quoted on that long BBC link that I sent you. Professor May is, he's not a doctor, important that, he's not medically trained, he's essentially a bacteriologist. And he's looking at certain aspects of infection which interest me. Now, I'm not going to go deeply into that, I'm not going to do a character assassination, but I don't like the look of it. I then put in, as I often do, Professor Richard May, Israel. And he's been to Israel. What was he doing in Israel? Well, he was in fact, working for the FDA, not on FDA, the food FSA, the Food Standards Authority of Britain, because the Israelis had managed to produce meat by cloning the cells which produce muscle cells in a cow. They actually named the cow in Israel. They produced tons of meat without, of course, that magic poison, methane, which is what, as you know very well, Tony, they're trying to cull the herds in this country, so they no longer fart or belch, because the methane is a potent greenhouse gas, much more potent than carbon dioxide, 100 times more potent than carbon dioxide, actually. So here's this Professor May, who's got, no doubt, had some funding for it as well, to go over and jolly with the Israelis, producing artificial meat and saying that it's okay. In fact, the rabbi has also given it the blessing as well. It's kosher as well. Do you hear me?
Yeah. Well, so he's the guy who's pontificating about hantavirus. What's he saying?
What?
Yes, he is. What's he saying about hantavirus?
Well, he's just giving a bit of... He says it's transmissible. I can't... It's a very brief interview. But they always want someone with a professor or someone like that to give it a bit of bottom, a bit of gravitas. This is how the propagandists work, as you know. But the main thing is, it's people are ill. They say three people died on the ship. We've heard of one. And Halpin says, and I actually am, I was a good pathologist as well. I know a lot about these things. That lady, that corpse, should be taken off, obviously, in a plastic bag with full precautions. And she should be examined by the best pathologists. That wouldn't be Professor Richard Shepherd, who examined the corpse of Joe Cox, who he said was stabbed, I think, 22 times in that little village in Yorkshire. All completely unlawful. Her body was taken to Leeds Infirmary, where she was at rest, apparently. I wonder whether she's dead. And it was then taken by London to be examined by Professor Richard Shepherd. Now, that was unlawful because the jurisdiction was in Yorkshire, in the city of Leeds. Have you heard me?
Yeah, the ship captain's medical guide. This should give most doctors on board a ship, or just a captain who's in charge of the ship, even if there's not a doctor, a pretty good idea of what to do in this sort of situation.
Would he have a good idea? Yes, he would. I'm sure captains learn about disease on board. They learn how to do it.
There's a thing called the Ship Captain's Medical Guide. It's been going, apparently, for decades.
I can imagine.
David, whereabouts can people find you online and follow your work?
They can find me. My Palestine website is doveanddolphin.org. It's started in 2003, was sabotaged on the first day by a Sayanim, that's a Zionist. They're placed all around the world to keep an eye on things. And you could see our ship being loaded with 40 tons of organic flour, ton of cheddar cheese from Mendips and other things from his house in Paignton, which had CCTV on it. I know that from a neighbor. And he sabotaged the website within 24 hours of its mounting by a wonderful neighbor called Milton, a friend, neighbor then. They moved away. I'm in contact with him still. And when, after 24 hours of the website being up, Dove and Dolphin, mostly older people supported us. They click on Dove and Dolphin. They first of all get a black page saying click on Dom Dalton. In the next page, what did it have? Do you know? I'll tell you. It was a little square in the middle, like the phylactera that they wear on their foreheads, these death cultists. And it said around it, I forget the last words, first main message was, Jerusalem will be forever Jewish. So an old person, often ex-Palestine police or ex-services, they were trying to stop the vast numbers coming in from Europe into Palestine to make it a Zionist entity. They'd click on and they'd be shocked with the black picture and this little thing in the middle. So from the first of February, when we set sail from Torquay until October, that website was sabotaged. I tried several ways of trying to get it back again, approached authorities in Canada. He, by the way, Eric Grief, was a graduate lawyer. He lectured at Lancaster University, and interestingly, there's a train which leaves from Paignton once a day, which goes to Lancaster in Lancashire, and he lectured there. When I was seeing, it's a very interesting story. It'll all be in my books if I survive this bad account, which I'm sure I will. I hope I will. I was seeing a lady policeman for personal injury claim, reporting on her injuries. Nice lady, and a young lady, and I said, what are you doing at the moment? She said, I'm on a youth justice board. I said, who chairs it? Eric Grief. He spelled his name, by the way, two ways, G-R-E-I-F or G-R-I-E-F. And back in Canada, he was a manager of a band called Death, I remember reading. So I phoned Home Office. I spoke to someone, I think fairly senior, I think. I said, do you know you're employing a racist? Next week it was done. We're back online. So the Home Office responded, but there was no written communication. I got no email, no Royal Mail about that. But that's how it happened.
They don't like to admit it.
6 months. We had 20,000 pound of donations up until the 1st of February when we slipped our moorings. From that time on, we had very few donations. But it would have helped because Sue and I spent a total with the charity that followed until 2011. We spent a total of £140,000 on our privileged laying on hand on the shoulder of these most noble people.
Well, so that you're not the first, although you might be one of the first, you're not the last, because on the 30th of April, post. Pro-Palestinian activists, David, say that 22 boats from a flotilla carrying aid for Gaza were intercepted by the Israeli forces in international waters near the Greek island
off the coast of Crete. I know that.
Crete, yeah. So this is the Global Sumud Flotilla, GSF, trying to take humanitarian aid, medical supplies and food into Gaza. Israel's foreign ministry said 175 activists were detained off of those 22 boats. No aid is allowed to go to Gaza.
Well, Tony, it's worse than that. I just had an email from Mazin Kumsair. He's essentially a botanist. He's a remarkable man. He hardly sleeps. But he describes what's happened to some of the people that they've abducted, taken to Israel. They've been put into torture prisons. And he's speaking about people being near the end of life. Although I've got this thing in my belly, my bladder, I'm very fit, actually. I've been gardening today. And tomorrow I will post it'll be the Continuum of Fascism, part 30. It'll mention Starmer, who's saying that the Iran war, as the Zionist Broadcasting Corporation called it, is not our war. He lies. But I will add what I've heard from our friend Mahmoud Baroud, PhD, senior lecturer in English at the Islamic University of Gaza, fine buildings with fine people, where Sue and I went in 2011. Sue was taken around the nursing faculty with a scarf on her head. They loved her because she's sort of classical Western physiognomy, you know, blue eyes, fair skin. And she had a lovely time there. They were very respectful. And I spent time there as well with the director. But that wonderful university, which looked after 22,000 students and has all sorts of research facilities and archives of great importance, is now rubble. Because, as you know, they've all this rubble, the mosques, the universities, the schools, the hospitals, only one or two survive as hospitals.
Well, they're going for Lebanon as well now, aren't they? But look, there's been a call for sanctions against Israel from Ireland after the interception of this Gaza flotilla. The Spanish have summoned the Israeli envoy.
Yes.
I don't think they have an ambassador anymore. The intolerable detention of Gaza flotilla activists.
The question is, Tony, what European countries have stood up to it? And the answer is none.
The Irish most definitely, and the Spanish. Yeah, I mean, I think the tide is changing about Israel. They used to be able to get away with these things.
It's too bloody late. It's not too late, but it's very late. I swear again. The fact is that the EU and NATO is two arms of global fascism. And there's no question about that. You know, Ursula von Leyen. I've written about her today. There's a long email to you, which you'll like, actually. I mention her because you may remember that 3 days after the breakout, when they wanted to get live hostages so they could parley with the occupying filth for the release of 12,000 prisoners in Israeli jails, some of them being tortured, some children down the age of 12.
Well, they broke prisoners out of war.
But they wanted to have live hostages, not dead ones. So that was all, as you know, they talked about children, babies being beheaded, women being raped, all lies. A lot of the deaths, in fact, were blue on blue. They were, in fact, killed by missiles from Apache helicopters doing the Hannibal directive on the directives of the Israelis. Now, that was on the 7th of October, 2023. On the 10th of October, Ursula von Leyen, president, unelected of the EU, unelected, and also the purchaser of something like 40 million euros worth of vaccines for the population of Europe. She had a laser light display on the EU headquarters in Brussels of the Star of David. Did you know that? My main website, which is vast, is dhalpin.infoaction.org.uk, and the homepage has got good stuff on it, including quotations of Goethe. It includes quotations of Mr. Nicholas Ridley, who wanted to destroy all public services in service to his friend Mrs. Thatcher. And I don't give up, Tony. And I won't be giving up, particularly if the surgeons at Charing Cross take me on for major surgery, which has a good chance of curing me.
God bless you, David, and I wish you well with all that, and we will speak to you afterwards.
Thank you, Tony, very much. Bye-bye.